Penny Lane, there is a barber showing photographs of every head he's had the pleasure to know.
Penny Lane, made famous in this Beatles song, is a real street in Liverpool, England. Using Google Earth, you can see the real Penny Lane, but you can't find Paul McCartney's house, because lawyers for the former Beatle asked Google Earth to block his property from view for privacy's sake.
Penny Lane is in my ears and in my eyes.
Nowadays, Google Earth offers more than just a look at Penny Lane, or for that matter, your own house. Archaeologists are using the bird's eye view of the world to pinpoint new sites for exploration. I'm Sarah McConnell, and this is With Good Reason. Later on today's show, help is on the way for the Elizabeth River, one of the most polluted rivers in the nation. It lies between two Virginia cities.
The residents of those cities rarely engage it because you cross through tunnels to get from one side to the other. So it's seen as a problem. It's the place where the traffic jams occur rather than the centerpiece of these cities, which it really is.
But first, Walter Witchy has had a rich and varied career in science. He started out as a computer programmer, but in 1985, he sold the business, moved to New Orleans, and got a PhD from Tulane studying Mayan archaeology. Now Witchy is a professor of anthropology and science education at Longwood University. He pioneered the use of satellite imagery in Mayan archaeology. Now, any student with Google Earth can do what it took a room-sized computer to do when he first started out. How did you become an expert in Mayan archaeology? Was that something that you knew from day one you wanted to do?
Well, day one was my 11th birthday when my parents gave me a copy of God's Graves and Scholars by C.W. Sarram. It was filled with marvelous stories of great archaeological discoveries, and it had two tales about the Maya culture in Mesoamerica. The first was Eric Thompson excavating the sacred well at Chichen Itza, which many tourists visit all the time today. He excavated the well, pulled out a number of gold sacrificial objects and skeletons and other things. And in those days, one's archaeology contract involved permission to take home some of the artifacts. The second story that caught my fancy was of John Lloyd Stevens, who went by a mule and horseback through Mesoamerica about the time of our Civil War. And along with him was Frederick Catherwood, a marvelous artist and architect who sketched Maya ruins as they traveled. As they got into Honduras, Stevens had the opportunity to visit and to purchase Copan, Honduras, which is the largest and one of the most elegant of all Maya sites. To me, it would be like someone from France moving through the United States and purchasing Yellowstone for $150. But out of those first tales, I was hooked in the Maya culture, and I was intrigued by this undeciphered writing script and by the highly sophisticated calendar that kept track of the sun and the moon and Mars and Venus and eclipses. And it just caught fire with me.
How did you go from an immersion in computers to deciding to leave all that and study archaeology at Tulane in New Orleans?
The story is an interesting one about life changes, because it clearly was a major life change. In 6 weeks, we had sold our house in Richmond, purchased a house in New Orleans, and begun a new life. So I went back to school as an old guy after being out of college 20 years.
So tell me a little bit more about the Mayans. Wasn't for a long time our understanding of them simply that they'd been magnificent and mysteriously declined?
Yes, and in 1952, the writing system was not intelligible. And since that time, it has slowly been deciphered so that we know that this fully productive script in which the Maya could write down anything they could speak out loud carries the stories of their kings and cities, The stories appear on carved stone monuments. They appear on the risers of temple stairways. They appear as frescoes and murals in tombs and on temple walls. And little by little, the language, which was a great mystery, has been deciphered. And the folks who are good at it today can read an ancient set of hieroglyphs out loud in modern spoken Yucatec Maya.
Have we been disappointed by what we're reading?
No, but our outlook has changed a great deal. For example, 50 years ago, folks talked about an idyllic, peaceful society in the jungle. And I think the visual image from a movie like Apocalypto is closer to the truth because we have clear evidence of captive taking, warfare, human sacrifice, and all of these things that you don't associate with a Garden of Eden approach.
Why had we initially thought these were people who were peaceful above all else?
I think 50 to 100 years ago, that was probably the hope and desire. One of the big questions about this society has been what happened in 800 to 900 AD. This is the period that we call the classic Maya collapse. And in northern Guatemala, the evidence is that a number of the huge cities become totally abandoned. In fact, by the time of the conquest, when Cortes marched through this area in the 1520s, he went within a few miles of Tikal and never saw it. It had been abandoned for 600 years. So the questions about what happened, and they seem now to relate very closely to this culture stretching the carrying capacity of the land around the large cities almost to the breaking point, and then getting hit by four multi-year droughts, which just shoved it over the cliff. And so by 1580, 1590, the population of 4 million or so has probably dropped to under 500,000. Today, of course, there are 5 to 6 million native speakers of the Maya language today. They occupy exactly the same region as this archaeological ancient culture we're talking about. And I think most interestingly, today Western scholars are teaching native Maya to read the ancient script, the symbols, the strange diagrams, these blocky hieroglyphs in paired columns on the big stone monuments and buildings, are readable.
What do they say?
Oh, my Maya is weak and poor, but I would say to you, Hachki mak imwo iwilikech. Glad is my heart that you are in my eye.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Sort of a poetic way of saying, I'm glad to see you, Sarah.
At what point did your years of expertise in the evolving computer industry start to really help you see these archaeological sites differently?
When I got to Tulane, I took very early satellite imagery collected by NASA and processed it so that I could see where the medium forest was, where the savanna was, where the mangrove swamp was. And since that time, changes have come pell-mell. Mamoru Mori was the first Japanese astronaut, and he was collecting elevation data. One of the marvels that came out of that particular imagery was being able to see a third of the rim of the Chicxulub crater. This is the meteorite impact zone in northwest Yucatan. Two-thirds of the rim of the crater are out in the Gulf of Mexico. A meteorite hit there 65 million years ago, and after that, no dinosaurs on Earth. Never before had any visual overflight imagery of this region showed us the rim of that crater. On the ground, you can't see it. Most of the Maya area, Mexico and Guatemala, is limestone rubble covered with jungle. And when you look at a Maya pyramid today, it also is limestone rubble covered with jungle. So it's very hard to detect by remote sense.
So we do believe there are other Mayan sites yet to be uncovered?
Oh, I'm sure of it, Sarah. Cliff Brown, my colleague and I, who work on this electronic atlas of ancient Maya sites, use our analysis of the sites to show us areas where there ought to be Maya sites, but we don't know of them yet. In 2005, we went into the scrub and surveyed a patch of ground that to us looked undersurveyed and identified 30 new Maya archaeological sites in a period of 6 weeks.
Really? That must have been so much fun for you.
It's very exciting. It's once you set aside the thorn bushes and the tarantulas and the rattlesnakes, it's really fun.
Have you had a close encounter with either a tarantula or a rattlesnake?
As close as I'd care to. One of the fellas surprised a rattlesnake that was in the stones of the terrace. It's telling that one of the states there next to the state of Yucatan is called Campeche. Con for serpent and pech for tick. So clearly this state is calling itself the land of the snakes and the ticks.
What about Google Earth? What I want to do is rush to my computer when this is over and look at some of the sites you've told me about, and I can do it through Google Earth.
Absolutely. This is one of the miracles, and this is a technology that's just a few years old, as you know. What's been happening, and you should watch this, Google is purchasing and loading into this system very high-resolution aerial photographs. And so out of that, we are able to see the layout on the ground. And the aerial photography on Google Earth is so good that you can zoom in on the tops of the major pyramids and count the terraces and count the stair steps to the top.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And that's fabulous. And of course, aerial imagery has been around for a century. Stonehenge is an interesting example because the British military flew over Stonehenge, and there are things you can see in those photographs that cannot be seen on the ground. Around this large ring of stones, you can see in the near distance small circles that are the remains of mounded burials. They've been plowed under over the last 2,000 to 4,000 years. But there is enough difference in the soil from where the mound once was that you can see it as a circular artifact in the photograph. And folk have found Roman ruins in England this way. And in the Maya area, one of the things that we're doing is to find ancient Maya roadways in the jungle because they sometimes leave marks like the crop marks.
You know, most of us are so busy and our lives are fragmented and give relatively little thought to these ancient civilizations, but I wonder if being immersed in them, you relate to them.
Well, I think one of the ways that I relate to all of this has to do with our current assessment of global warming and the impact of climate change on our own lives and on sea levels. These are folks who clearly got into a precarious position and got out to the edge of what the climate could support, and with a change, their social structure could not cope. And it makes me wonder whether, as we push up against our own use of resources, high consumption rates, possible significant changes in our own climate, we aren't facing similar problems with potentially similarly disastrous consequences.
Well, Walter, thank you for sharing your insights on the Mayan culture and new tools that we have for examining it today on With Good Reason.
Pleasure to be with you, Sarah. Thank you very much.
Walter Witchy is a professor of anthropology and science education at Longwood University. Coming up next, a classroom that floats on a river.